Ryan Rashog joins us now. Shogger, how are you doing?
I'm okay, buddy. How are you doing today?
I am good. I'm very good. Interesting to see the game tonight. The Oilers against the really banged up blue line of the Buffalo Sabres. And while I didn't think the Oilers played horrible in their three games when they lost to Arizona and Toronto, they definitely didn't do enough and really kind of exposed themselves with some terrible defensive miscues. If they avoid that tonight, they should be able to at least generate a lot of chances against this banged up decor.
Yeah, for sure. And if nothing else, just getting back out on the road where they're, for whatever reason, they're a better team. They seem to be able to get through games where maybe they don't start great or maybe they don't bring their best game right at the get-go, but they just, for whatever reason, they seem more resilient on the road. So I agree with you. I think they're better than Buffalo. They're certainly better than a banged-up Buffalo team. They're making some changes in their lineup, which will be interesting to see. Shaking things up a little bit in their bottom nine forwards, and maybe that'll elicit a little bit more production. We'll see.
What do you think of the lineup changes tonight? Pouliot and Slepyshev are out. Puljujarvi and Hendricks are in, and the first line stays the same. Every other line's juggled a little bit. Maroons with Nugent, yeah. Hopkins, and Eberle. You've got Cassian, Puljujarvi, and Kujula, and then you have Letestu, Pitlick, and Hendricks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. So it's Letestu, Pitlick, and Hendricks.
Yeah.
I liked Kujula and Pitlick together, so I would have probably liked to have seen that stay together. But beyond that, I have no problem with a little bit of elevation up the lineup for Maroon. He's brought some energy. He's been engaged. He's been nasty. He's been physical. He's been producing a little bit. So I have no issue. Pouliot's been terrible. Since coming back into the lineup, I think he's got about 90 minutes of ice time and 11 shots to show for it and one goal. So yeah, I mean, to listen to Todd talk about him today, basically he was asked about him, basically said there's more there from him and we'll figure out different ways to get it from him. So they're frustrated, and so they should be. I mean, he's been so non-productive and below average night in, night out, with little appearance that it's bothersome to him. I mean, there's just not really much effort being made to drag himself out of it. So he gets yanked, and rightfully so. Probably should have been sooner for Puljujarvi. Could have been easily. And I got no issue with the fact that Todd's doing it. He's going with a lineup that gives him a better chance to win a game, and that's right now with Benoit Pouliot in the press box.
A lot of people are like, well, Hendricks isn't as good of a player as Pouliot. And you know what? Maybe straight up, they're probably right with that. But when you look at a one-game situation and where they're going to play, minutes played, everything else, and how Pouliot's playing, you know, a lot of people got upset the last time Pouliot got put out of the lineup and all they did was win three games. To me, I don't look at this as the way Pouliot's playing. He's not better than Hendricks right now based on how he's played in the last 17 games.
Right. Well, and there's a couple of problems at play. They need to get Pouliot playing well or better, and it's the coach's job to do that, to figure out a way to get him going, to motivate him, so that they can trade him flat out. And they move him to a team and eat a bunch of salary, but probably make that move. But you're not going to trade him if you're not playing him. I think Matt Hendricks is also, there's a good chance Matt Hendricks could end up getting moved as well. Same thing. You got to have him in the lineup and get him in there. They have seen a good chunk of Pitlick. They've seen a good chunk of Slepyshev. They know what they have coming in Puljujarvi, and I think they probably feel like they can move on from a couple of guys that that would have, well, Hendricks anyways, I think would have some value out there for a team, assuming the Oilers would eat some salary. So it's kind of this revolving door of which lineup helps you win, which lineup helps the organization. And I think they're absolutely trying to move Pouliot, and they just he's unmovable right now because he's not only is he not playing well, but he's in and out of the lineup.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joined. Just when you look at the Oilers, and you know, one or two injuries, then their depth becomes an issue. Like, would it be wise to trade Matt Hendricks to get a mid-round draft pick? What would be the benefit?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think if you can turn these resources into some sort of an asset, then yeah. So if Matt Hendricks has some value and can get you I don't know what the pick would be. I mean, what range would he end up getting you? If you were to be willing to eat some salary for the rest of the year to get him moved, can you get a fourth-round pick for him?
Yeah, maybe.
Third-round, fourth-round, something in that range. I mean, they're going to lose him probably for nothing anyways. And they've got Kajula now. They've got Pitlick now. Slepyshev looks like he can push it being an everyday NHL player. So, I mean, I agree. He's a useful player and they need him, but I don't think that he's necessarily at what they're paying him to have him not in every night doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense either. So,
yeah, I guess the orders aren't in a cap crunch, right?
No.
And so
no.
I guess I just, for a team that I think right now their goal is to be a playoff team and they still don't have a ton of experience. And so then you get into a playoff push and maybe there's some injuries and now you've traded Matt Hendricks for a third or fourth round pick that might help you in 5 years, realistically, yeah. 5 years at best for most third or fourth rounders before they're going to pan out. To me, I don't see what you gain from that, especially because Hendricks doesn't have the reputation of being somebody who's going to be a distraction if he's not in the lineup regularly.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. I guess it's just, is he going to make the difference between them making the playoffs or not? And would Peter Chiarelli like to have a few more bullets in the gun heading into the draft next year? So you don't necessarily lose guys for nothing if you can make a trade and if you can get something in return for them. But the other thing is I think they have players that they want to have being everyday guys. I think they have players that they want to have in the lineup more nights than not. And Hendricks is a guy who's not in the plans moving forward. So every night you need to have Hendricks in and Slepyshev out. That's a night where you're not developing a young player who is showing signs of being ready to be there every day. So unless he's willing to play very rarely, which doesn't really make sense either. I just think the Oilers, I think Peter Chiarelli looks at some of the guys that are developing and says, well, they're the everyday guys now. And so it's okay to move on from another guy.
2:30 on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. What have you thought of the Russell Larson pairing?
Larson's been a little bit of a mess the last few games. I think I don't know if it's the pairing or if it's just him. I've found him to his decisions with the puck. He's making some errors with the puck. He's getting caught in some coverage errors. There's just the steadiness that was in his game before. He's just fighting it a little bit. He's on the wrong side of that a little bit. I don't know if that has anything to do with Russell, because I'm talking more one-on-one battles and off the rush and coverage in his own end, those sorts of things. So to me, Larson's taken a little bit of a step back. But Klefbom has too, and Klefbom hasn't been the reliability in his game that Todd McClellan wants to be able to give him the kind of minutes he was giving him earlier. So he's in a bit of a tough spot because you've got Darnell Nurse banged up. You got Eric Greiba banged up. They were a useful pairing. Probably their most consistent defenseman in terms of performance, what's expected from him and what he brings every night is Benning, which is interesting because he's in his first run through here. So I've found that Larson and Klefbom's games have taken a little bit of a step back. And without Nurse and without Greiba, it's just a little bit less consistency back there. So I don't know what that means about Chris Russell, but I've definitely noticed with Larson there have been some mistakes there that weren't there when he was playing well.
Benning has continued to just be a very pleasant surprise for this team. One guy, who they moved away from Larson was Oscar Klefbom, and Todd McClellan said, hey, we need more from Klefbom. Do you think he showed more in the Minnesota game?
Just checking my notes too to see if I had, because I thought I had a couple of notes on those guys. I remember him, like, he definitely took a step back and then that's when he got bumped. And I think he was maybe a little bit better against Minnesota. I noticed Larson more making a couple of mistakes and being a little bit shaky than I think Klefbom that game. Whether that means it's time to reunite them or not, I'm not really sure. It's funny, their blue line went from, having three, and this was even when Russell was hurt, having three pairings that seemed to fit pretty well together, and now they've sort of mixed and matched, and they're kind of in that zone where what's going to stick, what's going to fit, trying to find some stuff that works. And I didn't mind Sekera when he was playing with Russell. I didn't mind Larson and Klefbom together, but their play fell off. And so you can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again. They expect more from Klefbom. So whether he's earned a chance to get back into that 20-22 minute range, I mean, he's going to play his way into that in game and hasn't necessarily gotten there yet.
Do you think Gustafsson is an automatic to play Friday, or does it depend how Talbot plays? Do you think there's a chance you might see him Thursday and Talbot Friday?
Yeah, and what are the game times, and what's the travel?
That's pretty much you play in Philly at 7 o'clock, and then you're in Minnesota the next night at 7.
Right? Yeah, and there's some travel there for sure. I think Todd would probably shy away from going Talbot back to back just because of the overall work.
I know he's not going back. I'm saying, do you either go Gustafsson Thursday or Friday? There's no chance Talbot's going back to back.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I don't know which one he'll go with. I guess maybe it depends a little bit on tonight's performance and how Talbot looks. And if Talbot looks in any way, shape, or form, maybe a little tired or whatever, which he shouldn't. I guess you judge that after tonight's game. But the one thing I'll say is that even though, I mean, we weren't piling on Gustafsson the other night because, it was a tough one on the game winner. But other than that, he played, he made the save, made enough saves to have that team in the game. But, I mean, you were at that game too. And I said this the other day on the morning show, like I don't pretend to know what absolutely perfect goaltending looks like. I don't pretend to know what, be able to say that guy is so technically sound, it's crazy. But I do know what weird goaltending looks like. And Gustafsson's goaltending looks weird. He's all over the place. And all I know is if I were Todd McClellan standing on the bench watching my goalie do all that, I would be looking at my goalie like, are we sure? Like, you're sure. You can't really argue with the results because he's had a couple of good starts. But, man, he makes you nervous if you're a coach sitting there watching. It's weird goaltending. And I understand why he's played Talbot as much as he has this season when that's kind of the other option. Now, the numbers don't – I mean, he's been okay, but I don't know. How would you feel? Like, it's weird goaltending, man. He is all over the place.
Yeah, and you know what? Who knows? Maybe we talked to Kevin Woodley about that, and he said, hey, sometimes unpredictable goaltending is tough for teams. And to me, I honestly don't care how the goalie looks making the saves. If he's making the saves, to me – it doesn't matter. And Gustafsson gave him a chance. And all I know is on the breakaway, he looked great. On that 2-on-1 late, he looked great. Did he have some rebound errors in other parts? Sure. But to me, when your backup goaltender has a .923 save percentage in the games you play him, I'm not really going to be critiquing him that much.
Right. He's just getting his job done. But at the same time, as the coach, you need to have confidence to put him into different situations, right? Otherwise, you got to overplay your starter. And all I'm saying is if I were standing on the bench watching those performances, yes, in part of your mind you're going, okay, he's getting the results and he played well, so let's not over-question it. But at the same time, you're seeing pucks go off his glove hand and bounce 15 feet in front of him. And you're seeing stuff that, just basic stuff that most goaltenders wouldn't have happen. There's an unpredictability there, not just in terms of, oh, the players don't know what he's going to do. He's had some bad rebound stuff going on too, and you wonder if that'll, the more you play him, if that will catch up. And so I think that maybe is part of the reason why we've seen so much of Cam Talbot, because even though his numbers are, you know, decent, I just don't know that there'd be a ton of confidence there in the guy making the decision on who to play.
Yeah, well, I think I don't know if the team has that. I talked to the players after the game. They all seem pretty confident in Gustafsson in that
one. Well, of course. I mean, he played well. And quite frankly, Greg, they're not going to tell you or me if they're not. So I'm not suggesting the team doesn't have confidence in him. I'm not suggesting his players would even think, the rest of the players would even think twice about it. I'm just saying, if you're Todd McClellan watching that performance, yes, he's getting the job done, but holy smokes, he's all over the place and making some bad mistakes. And you're going, whoa, if I play this guy too much, those things are going to bite him.
Quickly, on the Edmonton Oilers, with Nugent Hopkins' inability to improve in faceoffs, he's 43% in his career. It's not like he's getting any closer to 50, right? He's arguably getting farther away, in fact, the last few years. So like, what do they do with Nugent Hopkins, who wants to be that shutdown guy, but can't for the life of you be responsible to win a faceoff?
What does he do with him? Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't really know the answer. He's been, at times he can be so good in his own end and so conscientious, and he can really, he showed us a few times this year, and especially the World Cup, that he can have a really good defensive zone game, but he can also have very mediocre play in that end as well, where he's not really engaged, and he's one of those guys that can miss some assignments now and then. So it's not like face-offs are the only thing that are stopping him from being an elite two-way center. I mean, he's got some holes in his game at times defensively too. So honestly, I don't really know what the answer is. There's no way to stress it other than to stress it. Make sure they're working on it in practice. But I mean, at the end of the day, if game after game after game he continues to not get results, you actually might have to start considering having other people take the draws. I mean, and they're doing it with McDavid right now. I don't love it, but they're doing it with McDavid right now. And I think that they might have to consider having somebody put him on a line with Mark Letestu. Put Letestu on his wing and have Letestu take all his draws, or move him to the wing. It sounds silly, but it's got to be a strong message to him that, like, there's no choice. You have to get better at this. And the work has to be put in, and it needs to be more than just what you've always done. And Ryan's a smart player. He's got a good work ethic. I'm not sure why he hasn't been able to figure this out yet.
I don't know if he puts enough time improving his face-off. Simple.
Well, then that's just it. I don't view Ryan as a player that has an issue with work ethic, but, I mean, we watch most of their practices when they're in town here. We got a pretty good sense of what they do. And what I'd say is there doesn't appear to be a ton of extra effort going into it. Just like there doesn't appear to be a ton of extra effort going into Jordan Eberle's one-timer from that power play spot, nor has there ever been, nor was there ever for Alex Hemsky. We've seen players with notable deficiencies in their games, and we sort of wonder about if the work is being put in, and I don't know, maybe we're confused about what it takes. But it would seem to me that the only way to get better at it is to absolutely work on it like a dog. And I recall watching Jarrett Stoll work on that skill every single practice for a long time, working his way into being elite at it.
Well, he kind of had at first I thought it was a luxury having Adam Oates and Sean Horkoff, but Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had Boyd Gordon, who's one of the best face-offs guys
right in
Edmonton, and he never got any better having him in practice. And Letestu is a 53% guy.
Yeah, you've seen other players come in and be just okay, but improve. I mean, Draisaitl has improved dramatically on the skill. So what did he figure out that Ryan hasn't been able to? I mean, why is it? And I can't imagine that the player doesn't understand how important it is. I can't imagine the world where he's not in tune with how critical that is. Like, if you don't get better at that, it will directly result how your coach can use you. You're no longer the best center on the team. So now he's the third best center on this team and the third worst faceoff guy. I mean, Connor has shown flashes now and then. He's kind of in the same range, but I can't imagine it's because Ryan doesn't get it. So it's, what do you need to do to get better at it? Figure it out and be a dog on a bone in terms of figuring it out. Because it's holding him back. It is absolutely holding him back. And frankly, it's costing his team because he's inefficient at it. They're having to move other players into positions that they don't belong in. And it's not ideal for Todd to have to stick handle around.
Shonger, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good, buddy. I'll be in Florida.
Oh, well, enjoy the heat. You better bring some extra pasty sunscreen just for you.
Will do. See you, buddy.
Ryan Rashog from TSN. He's heading out to the GM meetings, I think. The GM Board of Governors meetings.